Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man. 10. Courage of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by James Lewis, Terrence Aselford, Elizabeth Jernigan, Dylan Lynch, Ren Casey, Nanette Savar, James Konachek, David Korn, Tim Getman, Joe Brack, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Johann Detweiler, Thomas Penny, and Ken Jackson. Smoke Jensen stepped out of the cafe on the main street of Big Rock, Colorado. He leaned against an awning post and rolled a cigarette, lighting it just as Sheriff Monty Carson strolled up.
Need to talk with you, Smoke. You like a beer?
No, but I'll watch you drink one.
The sheriff and the most feared gun handler in all the West walked to the saloon, pushed open the bat wings, and stepped inside. Monty ordered a beer and Smoke ordered coffee.
I hear you're selling your stock, Smoke.
Most of it. Gonna raise horses, Monty. Oh, I'll keep a small herd, but nothing like we've had out of the Sugarloaf.
You using the rails?
I wish, Monty. No. This'll be a hard drive, all the way up to Montana, into a big valley. Town's called Blacktown. Fellow up there by the name of T.J. Dugan wants the whole damn herd.
The whole herd? Why?
It beats me. He's an eastern fella. Said he was in a hurry to get into ranching. He's paying me good money, Monty. I couldn't turn down the offer.
How about your hands once the drive is over?
A few want to drift, you know, cowboys. But I couldn't run most of them off with a shotgun. I'm going to be running a lot of horses, Monty. You know how I love the Appaloosas. I'll be needing hands.
When will you pull out?
Oh, about 10 days, I think. Why? You want to come along, do some honest work for a change?
Hell, man, I'd love to. But no. We have trials set for all next month. Smoke, you know you're going to be up into Clint Black's country.
Clint Black doesn't bother me. I don't even know the man. All I know is he's a rancher who thinks he owns the whole damn Montana territory.
Got some rough old boys riding for him, Smoke.
I've run up against some rough old boys a time or two in my life, Monty.
Both men watched as three young riders came walking their horses slowly up the street. Both men noted that the riders sat on Texas saddles. Without the wide skirt, the saddle horn was thicker and stronger for roping, and the stirrups were of the heavy-duty type. The brands were unfamiliar. All three cowboys wore their holsters tied down. One of the trio wore two guns.
You know him?
Never saw him before this day. What do you think?
Wild and woolly and full of fleas, probably. Might even be on the prod looking for trouble. They're young. Oldest one's not out of his early 20s, I'd say.
This place does have a back door.
Then use it.
I was rather hoping you would.
Too late now.
Well, I want some beer, and I want some pussy, and I want it now.
Hunting trouble.
They came to the right place.
Hey, what are you two whispering about over yonder? You talking about us, maybe?
The name is Carson. Sheriff Monty Carson.
The trio stiffened. Monty Carson had been one of the West's premier gunfighters until he married and settled down in Big Rock. Everybody had heard of Monty Carson.
If you boys are looking for a drink, some food, a place to spend a night, you found it right here in Big Rock. If you boys are looking for trouble, you found that right here and right now.
Oh yeah, old man! Well, that don't mean shit to me.
How about now, you little piece of nothing?
Slowly, the men each let their hands drift to the bar, where they placed them palms down.
Drink your drinks, get something to eat, and behave.
Monty's anger faded. He turned his back to him and started to the table in his unfinished beer.
No, Jack, don't do it!
Jack was grabbing for his gun, but Monty was quicker.
Now that is one dumb, dead son of a bitch. What do you think about that, Smoke?
I think my coffee got cold.
Sally Jensen, Smoke's wife, read the letters from her parents and her children, who were all in France attending school. One of their children was there for health reasons, being tended to by specialists. Smoke had picked up the letters in town and hadn't opened them, leaving that small pleasure for Sally.
Any word on when they'll come back home?
No. When do you leave?
Probably next week. I'd like to take you with me, honey, but cattle drive is rough work.
I'll be fine here. Just who is this Clint Black person?
A hard, unyielding tyrant of a man. I suspect that somebody sold this T.J. Dugan a bill of goods with this ranch he bought. Somebody wanted out of that country and found themselves a sucker. I don't even know the man, and I feel sorry for him.
Oh, my.
What's that all about?
I feel a quest coming on, oh man of La Mancha.
Sally.
I gave you the book to read.
Oh, yeah. Don Quixote. Am I the knight or the woeful figure?
Oh, hardly. But you do have this tendency to stand up for lost causes and the little person.
You knew that when you married me, honey.
And I love you all the more for it. Now stand up and put on an apron. I'll wash you dry.
Yes, dear.
On this drive north to Montana Territory, Smoke had hired 8 boys who were out of school for the summer. 1 16-year-old, 4 15-year-olds, and 3 14-year-olds. They were young, but they were good hands. Willie, Jake, Bobby, Rabbit, Louie, Dan, Sonny, and Guy. In addition to his regular hands, Smoke had hired on 4 more men who had drifted through. He wired their former employers, telegraph was making life a hell of a lot easier in the West, and received replies that the men were good hands who would give a day's work for a day's pay. That would give him 17 men for the drive. It wasn't enough, because the herd was very large, but he could pick up other hands along the way. The drive would be hard work for the boys, and it would also be an adventure for them. Smoke was kind of looking forward to it himself. On the morning of the pullout, the boys from the neighboring farms and ranches were so excited they could hardly contain themselves. Not only were they going on a real cattle drive clear up into Montana Territory, but they were in the company of Smoke Jensen. How much better could it get? The boys knew they'd be close to the drag most of the time, herding the remuda on either the right or left flank of the cattle. That was all right. It was a very responsible job, and they knew it. Smoke had figured it close as far as manpower was concerned. Some trail bosses figure 1 cowboy for every 400 cows. Smoke figured 1 cowboy for every 250 cows. They'd be pushing slightly over 3,500 head, not all belonging to Smoke. A half a dozen other ranchers had put a number of their cattle up for sale as well. But the price Dugan was paying was more than fair, so why not throw in with Smoke? The remuda was made up of more than 100 horses, so the boys would have their young hands full. Just before pullout, Smoke found 2 more punchers drifting through and hired them. They were down at the heels and looked like they needed a good meal just to stay alive one more day. But their horses were in good shape, and they had honest eyes and easy grins. Their hands were so calloused from handling cattle and ropes, Smoke knew they couldn't be outlaws. Cook was a sour-faced old coot with never a kind word for nobody. But he was the best trail cook in 5 counties, and he could be counted on to have coffee ready anytime the men wanted it. While they were in camp, that is.
That damn bunch of snot-nosed boys gonna eat us out of grub before we get 50 miles. This many men, we're gonna need another wagon, and I gotta get me a helper, too. That's that, or I ain't going.
Well, I do, Denver.
A female? Hell no!
Now, wait just a minute. I run this outfit. I say who's going along. And Sally's not coming along on this cattle drive.
I see, Mr. Jensen. It wasn't too dangerous for me to ride all over Hell's Creation a few months back with a rifle in my hand, getting you out of a bad situation.
Now, Sally...
Oh, no. That was quite all right for me to do that.
Why, there ain't no way this little bit of thing could keep up with me. And what if we run into some quarrelsome Injuns? I never seen a woman who could shoot worth a damn.
I really wish you hadn't said that.
Sally jerked one of Smoke's 44s from leather and put all 5 rounds into the knot on a log some 50 feet away. She handed the pistol back to Smoke.
What do you know about a chuck wagon, little lady?
I wish you hadn't said that either.
I know how to doctor cuts, drive a wagon, and prepare 3 hot and tasty meals a day. And I know how to point the tongue of a wagon toward the North Star every night.
Well, you and me, little lady, are gonna get along just fine.
I didn't say she was coming along.
I reckon you didn't, boss, but I can see that you ain't the only one who wears pants around here, neither.
The drive was delayed for one day while Sally got ready to go and made arrangements for this, that, and the other thing, as females are wont to do before a journey. Just as dawn was cracking the sky, the drovers hi-hoed the herd and started a moving north. One of the boys would take turns driving Miss Sally's wagon, which as it turned out was not a chore for any of them. Miss Sally was beautiful, and she smelled good too. Only bad thing was all the hands, men and boys, knew that Miss Sally had laid in a goodly number of bars of soap, like about 5 cases. And that meant that every time they stopped, if there was water handy, everybody was going to take a bath, whether they needed it or not. And the boys were looking forward to doing a whole lot of cussing on the trip, too. And now that was out. Well, they could all gather in a bunch and cuss quiet, they reckoned. After the second day out, elite cows were established and the herd moved along.
Keep them out of the dew in the morning.
Dew tended to soften the cattle hooves. They would average 10 to 12 miles a day. The chuck wagons were new, both bought from the Studebaker Brothers Manufacturing Company. Sally had seen to it that the coffee beans were Arbuckles, which always had a stick of peppermint packed in each 1-pound bag. Cowboys had been known to come to blows and sometimes guns over who got that peppermint. Sally straightened out that problem pretty easily by buying a huge box of peppermint candy before leaving. Everybody got a peppermint occasionally, even Smoke if he behaved. Sally and Denver worked well together, and the meals, although simple, were tasty. And with Sally along, they were varied, too. Smoke picked up the Western Trail just outside of Cheyenne and headed due north. They would stay on that trail until they got into Montana territory. Once they crossed the Powder in Montana, Smoke would cut north and west, heading for the mountains in the town of Blackton. That final leg would be the real test, because the drovers would be pushing the huge herd over no established trail.
Are we going to see wild Indians, Mr. Smoke?
Smoke looked at Rabbit across the flames of the fire.
I'm sure we will, Rabbit, but it's unlikely they'll be hostile ones. More than likely, they'll be begging for food. The route I've mapped out will keep us off any reservation land, but not by many miles.
Later, when the crew had bedded down, Smoke had a cup of coffee with Denver.
You know Clint Black, Smoke?
Not personally, only by reputation.
Well, he's a bad one. Tried to hire me out one time right after the war when he first come out here. I wouldn't work for him. He runs the biggest cattle operation in the territory. Hundreds of thousands of acres. He started the town of Blacktown. It's grown so much now that he don't control it no more, but he does swing a mighty big loop when it comes to town matters. In my opinion, this Dugan feller's a damn fool for going up against someone as powerful as Black.
Surely Black is not the only rancher in the county.
Oh, no, of course he ain't. But the others is just hanging on. Black controls the best water, the best graze, the best everything. This is a story that's been played out 1,000 times in the West, Smoke. But this Dugan feller just might hold a joker in the deck.
How do you mean?
Well, several rivers and some fair-sized creeks run through that part of the country. Black is big, but he ain't so big that all the water or all the best graze is on his holdings. You say Dugan's brand is a Double D?
That's right.
Well, more than one Dugan, then.
Unless his name is Don Dugan.
Your Dumb Dugan is more like it.
What's Black's brand?
The Circle 45. And, brother, his hands don't hesitate to back up that brand with lead.
If he leaves me alone, I'll certainly leave him alone.
Yeah, this many cattle coming into a part of the country Black thinks he's the lord and master of? Oh, no. He'll stick his nose in to see what's going on. And if he thinks he can get away with it, he'll take this herd.
No law in that part of the territory?
The sheriff is Clint's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke delayed the start of the drive the next morning. He sat alone, drinking coffee and giving some serious thought to sending the boys back home. Sally came over and sat down beside him on the ground.
What's the matter, honey?
Smoke laid it out for her. He never kept anything from her, and he was going to ask her opinion anyway.
Well, the boys would be awfully disappointed. Do you really think this Mr. Black would harm a boy?
From what I've heard about him, I think he's probably capable of doing just about anything. But it's hard for me to believe that a man who would do that could make it as big as he has here in the West. You know how Western people feel about kids. But all that means is he's either never done something like that before, or he didn't get caught. Maybe Denver is stretching the truth a bit. I don't know. I do know that I've got a contract to deliver this herd, and I'm going to push it through. Come on, let's go meet with the crew.
Smoke laid it out for all of them. He knew what the reaction of the men would be, and Rabbit put it into words.
Sounds like this old boy is meaner than a snake, boss. But I've killed a lot of snakes in my time. As far as him hurting these youngsters, I can't see him doing that. Western folks just wouldn't stand for it. No matter how big and powerful he is, if he ever done something like that, a lynch mob would string him up real quick.
The other men nodded their heads in agreement. Even Denver agreed with the majority.
Especially if the boys wasn't toting no iron.
Any of you packing guns?
The boys shuffled their boots and exchanged sheepish glances that silently spoke volumes.
Get your saddlebags and bedrolls and spread them out right here in front of me.
Every boy had a pistol tucked away. Smoke took the guns and gave them to Denver.
Tuck them away, boys. But you know that out here, you strap on a gun, that makes you a man on the spot. Now, if we're attacked, you certainly have the right to defend yourself. Your guns won't be locked away. They're handy if you need them. Now, I'm going to squat down by the fire and have another cup of coffee. All of you talk this out and come up with some sort of decision. You let me know what it is.
Smoke chewed on a biscuit and drank a cup of hot, strong coffee while he waited. Sally stayed with the hands. Smoke's drive foreman, Nate, broke off from the group and came over.
Boss, me and Miss Sally voted against these boys going on. I think this drive is shaping up like trouble. But the others, they voted to go on. I reckon it's up to you.
No, if the majority voted to go on, that's it. Finish your coffee and let's put some miles behind us.
No sooner had the herd entered Wyoming than Smoke looked out at the horizon and saw a dozen riders were coming up, trotting their horses. The riders didn't look a bit friendly. Smoke rode out to meet them, putting some distance between himself and the herd. The riders pulled up and sat looking at Smoke. They were all pretty well set up, so they probably weren't rustlers, but they all appeared sullen, and Smoke did not take to them at all.
We're from the Cattlemen's Association.
Congratulations. Do you want applause?
You best button your lip, mister.
I wasn't born with a button on it. Now state your business and get out of my way. I've got cattle to drive.
Nate and Shorty had left the herd to ride up alongside the boss. While neither one was a gunslinger, they could both shuck a Colt or Remington out of leather mighty quick, and they were crack shots.
By God, I'll not stand for talk like that. We're here to inspect your herd, and you best just stand aside.
Inspect my herd for what?
Been a lot of wrestling going on. You're a stranger here, so we take a look at your cattle, whether you like it or not.
I don't care if you inspect my herd, but you'll do it while they're moving. Now get out of my way.
Just who in the hell do you think you are, buddy?
Smoke Jensen.
Those among them with any sense at all made certain their hands were in plain sight, and they made no quick moves. Smoke glanced at Shorty.
Get the herd moving. If these gentlemen want to inspect it, that's fine with me. But they'll do it on the move.
Right, boss.
Shorty wheeled his horse, took off his hat, and waved it in the air.
Head them out!
If you gentlemen wish to ride along and inspect the herd, feel free to do so. We'll be stopping for lunch in about an hour. You're welcome to eat with us.
Well, that's very kind of you, Mr. Jensen. We'll just ride along for a time and then take you up on your most generous offer of a meal.
Smoke nodded, and he and Shorty and Nate rejoined the herd. Lunch was a thick, rich stew, sometimes called son-of-a-bitch stew, with sourdough bread to sop in it, with dried apple pie for dessert and all the coffee anybody could drink. Over lunch, Smoke asked Walt, which he found out was the man from the Cattle Association's name, about Clint Black.
Well, I never met the man, Smoke, but I knows about him. Runs the biggest spread in all of Montana territory, Circle 45. Has maybe, depending on the time of year, anywhere from 50 to 100 men on the payroll. You're not taking these cattle to him, are you?
No, to a man named Dugan. Runs the Double D spread.
Well, I never heard of him.
I think he's new out here. He bought my whole herd and about 1,000 from neighboring ranches. Said he wanted to get into the cattle business fast. I've never met him. Everything was handled through lawyers.
Getting to be a man can't break wind without first checking with a lawyer.
Walt gave Smoke a handwritten note.
He'll have no trouble in Wyoming. Just show anyone that stops you that note, they'll wave you right on through and help you with the drive for a time.
The men shook hands all the way round, all but Bayless. That man had a hard look in his eyes ever since he had learned it was Smoke Jensen who was leading the herd. He rode out alone right after lunch. Nobody missed him until he couldn't be found, and the drover told them he saw him riding out toward the northwest.
I hope he keeps on riding. Bayless is a troublemaker. Runs a little rawhide spread not far from here. There is a mean streak in that man that I never could cotton to. Shame, too, because he came from good stock. I knew both of his parents before they died.
How's he live? That was a good horse and a fancy rig.
Well, lots of us wondered that. I ain't saying he's crooked, but it wouldn't surprise me to find out he was. Maybe he's heading back to Montana. He worked up there for years. Say, I think he worked for the Circle 45, come to think of it.
The herd pushed on, and for a time they had nothing but beautiful weather. The boys were turning into good hands, and it surprised everybody to see how closely they watched the remuda and how well they took to accepting responsibility. The days began to blend together as they pushed north. The herd was stopped several times by Cattlemen Association members and by curious ranchers. But the letter Walt had given Smoke quickly brought smiles and offers of meals and a chance to take a real bath in a tub, something Sally jumped at. That evening, Smoke found himself at the table of a kindly rancher who had heard Smoke was passing through near his ranch and had written him an invitation. They all sat around the table enjoying a fine meal of fried chicken, potatoes, and gravy.
I've heard about you for years, Smoke. I figured you'd be a much older man.
I got started young.
Oh?
After my pa was killed, an old mountain man named Preacher took me in.
What say? Well, Preacher's famous. He took the first wagon train over the Oregon Trail, didn't he?
Something like that. Preacher was the first to do a lot of things out here. My teenage years were spent in the company of old mountain men. I got a pretty good education.
And you and Sally have been married how long?
Well,
You'd better get it right.
We've been married, 10 years.
That's close.
What do you know about a man named Clint Black?
He's a bad one, Smoke. I'd say he's probably in his mid to late 40s, ruthless and dangerous and powerful. He took country that was untamed and built an empire out of it. He's big and strong as a bull, and there's no backup in him. It's his way or no way at all.
Nobody's right but him.
That's it. Anybody gets in his way, he just rides right over him.
Would he hurt a boy? Those boys I have with me, for instance.
Oh, I wouldn't think so. But with a man like that, hell, you never know. I know he's run off nesters, but I never heard of him or his men ever harming a child. Hell, I ran off nesters till I got tired of it and learned to live with them.
You know anything at all about T.J. Dugan and the Double D Ranch?
I can't say as I ever heard of him or his brand. T.J. Dugan. Don't ring a bell with me.
The herd slowly put the miles behind them. They crossed rivers, pulled the cattle out of quicksand, and fought the heat, ate the dust, and endured the loneliness of the trail. But the older men remembering how it was years back when there were no towns along the way, when there was nothing except an empty, seemingly never-ending vastness, and then screaming engines that came out of nowhere. Yeah, it was bad now, but it was way worse back then. About 50 miles after crossing the North Platte, they hit a vast grassland, and the cattle slowly ate their way across, regaining the few pounds lost on the way north. Holding the herd outside of a small town in northern Wyoming, Smoke and several other riders accompanied the wagon in for supplies. It wasn't much of a town, even by Western standards. A large general store, blacksmith, and a saloon. The stage stopped twice a week. The town had sprung up out of nowhere. It lasted a few years, now it was dying. Another couple of years and it would join the many other towns that failed in the West. Not too many miles to the west, there was another settlement called Donkey Town, although some were trying to get its name changed to Rocky Pile. While the supplies were being loaded, Smoke walked the short distance to the saloon. If there was any news worth hearing, he would learn of it at the saloon. Smoke pushed open the bat wings, ordered a beer, and leaned against the bar. But he hadn't had time to lift the mug to his lips when the bat wings flew open and two young men stomped in.
Hell of a herd outside of town, and boy, you ought to see the cook. She is a looker, let me tell you.
Let me just stop you there, boy, before your mouth gets you into more trouble than you can handle. That beautiful lady out there happens to be my wife.
Wife or not, still don't change the fact she's a looker. You don't even want to know the things I'm thinking about doing to her right now. In fact, maybe I'll just blast you to hell and take me a little ride to heaven with you for anything. You shot my hand! You ruined my hand! It's all busted up!
You're lucky you're alive, you fool. Now take your little friend and run along home, Junior. I don't have time for you anymore.
Smoke looked at the bartender. The man didn't look surprised at all by what had just happened.
That dumb shit's been looking to get taught a lesson for quite a while. Problem is, though, he's got himself a brother. He's a plumb, dumb, mean son of a bitch, and he's quite a bit quicker with his pistolas. They call him Rocky.
He lived far from here?
About 3 miles out of town.
I don't want my herd stampeded or any of my hands hit by stray bullets. Go get him, or let's straighten this mess out right now.
The barkeep stepped into the back storeroom. He came out a minute later.
I sent one of my storeroom boys to go and fetch. You sure that's what you want?
What do you think?
It didn't take long for Rocky to ride in and swing down from the saddle in front of the barber shop. Two guns and all. Smoke knew by the way he walked the man wasn't in any mood to talk.
Jensen, you better make your peace with the Lord, because I'm sure gonna kill you for what you done to my brother.
Rocky charged forward. Smoke hit him flush in the mouth. Rocky got hit so hard he sailed through the bat wings and back out into the street. Smoke followed him out. Kicked the gun from Rocky's hand. Smoke reached down and slapped the man hard twice across the face. Then he hauled Rocky up and proceeded to beat the snot out of him. When Smoke finally let the would-be gunslinger fall, he was pretty sure that Rocky's jaw was broken in at least two places, and he had numerous broken ribs. Rocky wasn't going to be riding for a long time.
Nice meeting you, Rocky. You got a real nice family.
Back at the herd, Sally walked to her husband's side.
Any trouble in town?
Nothing to speak of.
Sally looked at the blood splattered all over Smoke's shirt.
That must have been a really intense nothing.
Smoke stripped off his shirt and handed it to her, then rummaged around in his bedroll for a fresh one.
Oh, you know how it goes. Some dummy thought he was right, I disagreed. We had a real long conversation. Turns out I was right all along.
I'm sure it was quite a conversation. Do we stay here for the night?
I think it would be best if we moved on for a few more miles. No point in wasting good weather.
They experienced no more trouble as the herd moved slowly north. The drovers pushed them into Montana, and after 3 days' drive, they turned the herd west. Now the real test began, because there was no known trail. That meant that Smoke stayed busy all day, seeking a right-of-way for the herd and being careful not to damage the property of other ranchers and farmers. And the drovers had to work twice as hard in order to keep the herd together and not pick up anyone else's cows. Hands from other ranches willingly pitched in to help. They did it for many reasons, including the chance to pick up news and to taste some of Sally's cooking, because word had spread out before. Many of them also wanted the chance to size up Smoke Jensen. The majority of the hands and ranchers who met him quickly found themselves liking the man, for they found in him a man who worked just as hard as his hands and who told it the way he saw it, pulling no punches. That was the Western way. And the story of the shootout back in that little Wyoming town and the fistfight that followed had already spread to be told and retold around the campfires of the West. The boys in the drive got their wish, and they met some Injuns. They weren't hostile and appeared to be starving, but there was no way they were going to beg. They had been defeated on the battlefields and now were not much of a threat to anyone. But beg, they would not do. Smoke could see that. He could also see hungry children, and he couldn't stand that. Smoke gave him 10 of his cattle and wished him well. Smoke cut north for several days to avoid the Indian reservations, then again pointed the herd west. They had one hell of a time crossing the Yellowstone, almost losing a hand when his horse panicked and floundered. They saved the hand, but the horse was swept downstream, and the cowboy lost horse, saddle, saddlebags, and Winchester. Then they hit days of hot, dry weather before they reached the Sweet Grass River. The cattle almost stampeded when they smelled that water. One old mossy horned bull who had joined the herd a few days back charged a horse and gored it so badly the horse had to be shot. When the horse fell, Harris was pinned under the saddle. The bull took out his mad on Harris before Smoke could kill it. Harris was buried beside the trail. He wasn't the first to have been killed on a cattle drive, and he certainly was not going to be the last. Mountains towered all around him as Smoke wound the herd through valleys lush with summer vegetation. These weren't yet the towering peaks that lay farther north, but they were respectable mountains just the same. Smoke halted the herd in a long, wide, beautiful valley and told his people to let him graze.
Well, this is where Dugan said he'd meet us. So make camp and relax. We're a couple of days early, give or take a week or so.
That night, Sally snuggled next to her husband.
This is puzzling. Why didn't this Dugan want the herd taken straight to his range?
I don't know. Unless he doesn't want Clint Black to know about it just yet.
That must be it.
The next morning, Nate came fogging his horse into camp.
Two women coming, boss. Riding side saddle and all. They some dude it up, too. Funniest looking hats I ever did see.
Two women? Here?
There they come, boss. See for yourself.
The women were twins, and identical twins at that. They were elegantly dressed in the very latest Eastern riding habits. Their hats were huge things, with what looked to Smoke like mosquito netting tied under their chins. They walked their horses over to a natural rise and stepped daintily from the saddle, handing the reins to a dumbstruck young rabbit who was bug-eyed staring at the pair.
Which one of you is Mr. Jensen?
Right here, ma'am. And you two would be...
I am Tony, and this is my sister, Jean. Dugan.
Smoke got it then. T.J. Dugan.
You gotta be kidding.
Quite the contrary, Mr. Jensen. We own the Double D Ranch.
By then, everybody had gathered around, gawking.
This is my wife, Sally.
Pleased, I'm sure.
Of the New Hampshire Reynolds?
Oh, my. I didn't realize. Of course. We've read about you, Sally. How wonderful to find some degree of breeding out here in this bastion of coarseness and vulgarity.
Where are your hands, Miss Dugan?
I beg your pardon?
Your hands. No, I didn't mean them. Not your hands. Your crew. Your cowboys.
We don't have any yet.
You don't have any. Well, how in heck are you going to handle this cattle without a crew?
Oh, well, we'll leave that up to you. I mean, that's what you do, isn't it?
On my own ranch, yes. I don't hire out to other people.
Well, I'm certain we can work something out. Come now, time's wasting. Let's don't dawdle. We have quite a distance to go.
Wait a minute. Where's your ranch?
12 miles that way. We camped in the timber last night. We'll pick up our equipment on the way back. We're quite expert in the woods, you know.
No, I didn't know. Camped in the woods. Experts, no less. All right, get the cattle ready for the trail.
Sally was smiling at Smoke's expression.
Don't dawdle now, honey.
Did we do something wrong? We've been out here from Boston for several months, and we seem to, well, anger all the people we've come in contact with.
I wonder why.
The ladies' camp was equipped like an African safari. Smoke and the other hands had never seen so much junk in all their lives.
What's that thing?
Rabbit pointed to a canvas tent at the edge of the camp area.
It ain't even got no top to it.
Don't ask me.
One side is for bathing, and the other side is a toilet.
Huh? Do tell.
We're not going to make the ranch by nightfall. We'll be lucky to make 2 miles in this country. Best thing we can do is camp here for the night and leave early in the morning. You really have no one on the ranch?
Well, we have a cook and a nice young Spanish boy who takes care of the horses and does the lawn work. We just can't get anyone else to work for us. We're obviously doing something wrong, but no one will tell us what it is.
You're just new out here. It takes Western folks a while to size up a person.
Oh, well, I have an idea. We'll give a party, and that will break the ice. What is it called out here? Wig dig?
Shindig, ma'am.
Ah, yes, that's it. I don't suppose there are any violinists close by.
I rather doubt it.
Oh, well, my sister and I will entertain. We're very accomplished musicians.
Wonderful.
Yes, Jean is a flautist, and I was trained as a classical pianist.
Ought to be a real entertaining evening.
Oh, quite. Are you familiar with Chopin?
Smoke shook his head. He was all of a sudden getting a bad case of indigestion.
Do you know the closest place where we might order caviar, Mr. Jensen?
No, ma'am, I don't.
A bit later, the group all sat down for supper.
You see, after our parents were killed, my sister and I came into quite a sizable inheritance. We have funds in other businesses, of course, but we felt it would be exciting to own a ranch.
Right. Have you met your neighbor yet? Clint Black?
He came to call. He found something hysterically amusing. He laughed the entire time he visited. I found him quite boorish, to be truthful.
Yes, Mr. Black is a rather nice-looking man, in a rugged sort of way. But he's terribly coarse. His table manners were an abomination. We fixed cucumber sandwiches for him, and he said he wouldn't feed those to his horse.
You have to understand that Western fare is simple, but filling and wholesome. Most out here grew up on beef and beans.
From the expression on her face, that cuisine didn't meet Tony's approval at all.
Just where is the town of Blackstown?
About 25 miles west of our location. A rather quaint little town.
Did Clint Black say anything, well, threatening to either of you?
Not directly, Mr. Jensen. But we both feel there were some thinly veiled threats.
Tell me about them.
Well, he is an unmarried man, and women are scarce out here. He made some rather crude advances at Jean, and then when she rebuffed him, he directed his attentions toward me. I told him that I was not interested. He said I'd come begging before all this was over. I asked him what in the world he meant by that, and, well, he just laughed and walked away.
Then I noticed that we were being watched and followed constantly. When we tried to hire people to work on our ranch, they would just shake their heads, mumble something, and walk off. It's obvious that Mr. Black had ordered us boycotted for some reason. We are able to shop in the town, for many of the merchants there don't care for the man or his high-handed tactics. Mr. Black's brother Harris, a thug, if I ever saw one, is the sheriff, and his deputies are just as bad as he is, if not worse. All in all, it is not a pleasant situation.
Who sold you this ranch?
It wasn't sold directly to us. Our attorneys are always looking for places to make our monies work. And when this property came on the market, they bought the ranch. However, they had no idea that we would personally come out here to run it. You think that we are ill-suited to do so and that we were wrong to come out here, don't you, Mr. Jensen?
Smoke. My name's Smoke. And in answer to your question, yes, I do think you're out of place here. Clint Black is a dangerous, ruthless, and power-hungry man. From what I was able to learn about him, he's about as easy to get along with as a rattlesnake.
Our attorneys said much the same about you, Mr. Jensen.
Have your attorneys ever been west of the Mississippi?
Heavens, no! But everyone they communicated with said you were a bad man.
Out here, Jean, the phrase a bad man doesn't hold the same connotations as back east. It doesn't mean that a person is evil or not to be trusted or anything like that. It means that person is a bad man to crowd or try to harm. It means he's a dangerous man in a fight. My husband is known as a bad man because he has the name of a gunfighter.
We saw the play.
That's too bad. I'm told it's terrible.
And we've read the books.
They're even worse.
I must admit that you are a rather imposing figure of a man. Have you really gunned down 5,000 men?
If I had done that, when would I have time to get married, build a home, father children, and run a ranch? I'm afraid the stories about me are highly exaggerated. I'm going to make a turn around the herd. It's getting late. We'd all best get ready to hit the sack.
He's only gunned down about 1,000 men.
Oh, my!
Smoke lunged to his feet, grabbing for his guns. He could hear the thunderous roar of the stampede building. He jammed his feet into his boots and slung his gun belt around his waist just as the camp filled with horses. Smoke could just make out hooded men all wearing long dusters and all with guns in their hands. A horse hit him and knocked him sprawling.
Sally! Run for the timber! Run, honey!
He was again knocked spinning by a running horse. He grabbed a hold of a rider's leg and jerked him out of the saddle. A bullet nicked his head and he fell to the ground.
Sally!
Smoke surged back to his feet. He jumped up behind a rider and hammered blows at the man, knocking him out of the saddle. Smoke fumbled for the reins and found him. The night was so black he could not see 5 feet in any direction. Suddenly, something struck him on the head. The last thing he remembered was grabbing hold of the saddle horn as the badly frightened animal took off in a panicked run. Warmth awakened him. Smoke lay on the ground for several minutes, not moving. Without lifting his head, he opened his eyes. He was in the high country. He could tell that. But he didn't have the vaguest idea where in the high country. And to make matters worse, he didn't know who he was. Smoke rolled over and pain tore through his left shoulder. He sat up. His left shirt sleeve was bloody. Part of a large splinter was sticking out of his flesh. He remembered being shot or thinking he'd been shot. He must have been hit with the stock of a rifle. The stock must have been broken and it ripped apart when whoever it was hit him, driving the splinter into his shoulder. Gritting his teeth, he pulled the long pieces of wood out of his shoulder. Smoke gingerly felt his head. It hurt. There were two lumps on his noggin and dried blood.
Sally!
Finally, the events of the night before came crashing back to him. He looked up at the sun. About 10 o'clock. He felt sudden panic try to overtake his emotions. He pushed panic aside and regained control. He pushed himself to his boots and almost fell, reaching out to grab a small tree for support. He leaned against a tree for a moment. Damn, but he was weak. He tried to sort out the jumble in his aching head. The camp had been attacked. He remembered yelling for Sally to get away. He recalled the shooting and the hooded riders. Smoke had absolutely no idea where he was, but at least now he knew who he was. He inspected himself for further wounds and could find nothing except bruises from being knocked down several times by running horses. Maybe he'd been kicked, too. He just couldn't remember. Smoke started carefully down the slope because he was strangely weak, and that was one condition he was not accustomed to. He dropped his hands to his guns. They were in place. He felt for his knife. It was there. Obviously, the attack had come so quickly he had not had the time to pull his guns from leather. He had to find Sally. A few hundred yards later, he found a spring and bellied down on the ground and drank his fill. Smoke took off his bloody shirt and bathed his wounds. He found moss and placed that over the jagged rip in his shoulder, tying the moss secure with his kerchief. He drank again and could feel the strength returning to his powerful muscles, and he felt his head clearing. A cold anger was filling his head instead. Smoke knew that sensation well. If Sally had been hurt or killed, he knew he had to face that possibility. This countryside was gonna run red with blood. Any man who would order the killing of women and boys didn't deserve to live. And Clint Black had made one very large mistake. He had let Smoke Jensen live. In a clearing, Smoke got his bearings. He picked out landmarks he had seen coming in, and now he knew his approximate location. He started toward the last camp they had made, figuring it was about 5 miles away. He found a body, but the rampaging cattle had trampled it beyond recognition. Then he found a boot, and he recognized it as belonging to one of the new hands, Eaton. Smoke stuck a stick in the ground to mark the spot and walked on. He would be back to bury the remains later. He found Willie next. He knew it was the 15-year-old because of his overalls. He preferred him over jeans. Using another stick, he marked the spot and walked on. Sadness mixed with the coldest anger he had ever experienced, washing over him with every step. Duke lay on the ground face down. He'd been shot a dozen times in the back. Rabbit was next. Someone had roped and dragged him.
14 years old. 14 years old.
Smoke walked on. He could smell the wood smoke now. The raiders had probably torched the wagons and probably piled on as many bodies as they could find. Shorty had made a stand of it behind some rocks, but it didn't do him any good. He was riddled with bullet holes. Smoke took his rifle and all his cartridges. Davey had taken a round right through the head. Smoke took his leather waistcoat and slipped it on. He found Johnson and took his hat and gloves. Smoke turned, and the foreman's horse walked slowly toward him. Nate had managed to get saddled up. Smoke had no way of knowing the foreman's fate. He could guess. He pulled the saddle off the horse and rubbed him down with dry grass. He smoothed out the saddle blanket, saddled up, and swung into the leather. Nate's Winchester was in the boot, so Smoke rode with Shorty's rifle across the saddle horn. He only rode a few hundred yards before he found his foreman. Nate and Little Ben had stood and fought it out to the end. Smoke took their weapons and ammunition in the canteen that one of them had grabbed.
God damn it. I'll see you in hell, Black. I'll personally send you there. Where are you, Sally?
But Jean...
If she's alive, we'll find her. Right now, we've got to stay low and quiet. The raiders are still beating the bushes for us. Now stay calm. We'll get out of this.
Your husband?
My husband is a hard man to kill. Now listen to me, Tony. These words are going to sound unfeeling to you, but I know how Smoke thinks. Smoke can take care of himself, if he's alive. And I've got to face that. Right now, he would want me to concentrate on survival. That's what we've got to do. We're no good to anybody dead. Come night, I've got to strip some pants off a dead hand and get you in them and out of that stupid-looking riding habit.
Oh, men's pants!
Yes, damn it, men's pants! That thing you're wearing would hang up on every twig and branch. We've got to be able to move quickly and silently. Have you ever fired a gun?
Oh, heavens, no!
This valley we're in, how long is it?
I don't know, but it's very long and winding. Miles. And Sally, there aren't that many ways in and out.
I was afraid of that. They'll choose the ambush site well. We're boxed in, and you can bet they've got the passes covered. So we're better off staying right here for the time being. Well, I've got a rifle and my pistol, and my cartridge belt is full. Right now we need blankets and food and water. Horses would be nice, but I think we're probably better off on foot. Now, Tony, you stay right here. Don't you move one inch from this spot. Do you understand me?
Oh, don't leave me, Sally.
I've got to. I've got to get supplies. If I don't, we'll die. Don't move from here, Tony. For God's sakes, don't move.
I promise I won't. I swear it, Sally.
I won't be long. Perhaps an hour. If I'm lucky, less than that. You stay low and quiet. You're tougher than you think, Tony. We all are when the going gets rough.
Sally patted Tony's arm and slipped into the brush. Away from Tony, she paused to compose herself. She was scared, but she couldn't let Tony see that.
Smoke, honey, where are you?
Sally found Jake's body. The boy had been gut shot and dragged himself off in the bushes to die.
Dear merciful God, 15 years old.
Sally tugged the boy's jeans off and then started to cover him up, but she thought better of it. That would be a sign that she sure wouldn't want the raiders to find.
Sorry, Jake. You were a good hand.
Unlike Smoke, Sally had caught a glimpse of the brand on the horses of the raiders, Circle 45. And one had seen her looking at the brand just a second before she leaped into the darkness of the bushes, dragging Tony with her. So they had to kill her. They couldn't afford to let her live and be a witness against them. Circling, Sally found the body of one of the new men, Forrest. She took his gun and gun belt and hat and left him as she found him. She made her way cautiously to the campsite and studied it for several moments before slipping up to the smoldering ruins of the wagons. All of the bodies had been dragged away. She could see that sign. She grabbed up two blankets, a full canteen, a tarp, a knife still in its sheath, and a sack of canned foods. She was disappearing into the brush just as Smoke was engineering his way up to the ruins. Smoke had found no more bodies, and like Sally, he had read the sign where the bodies had been dragged off. He squatted, only his eyes moving, picking out the scattered articles he wanted. He moved very quickly, scooping up a blanket. There was a ground sheet and blanket tied behind the saddle of his horse, a side of bacon that was half buried in the dust, a battered coffee pot and a sack of Arbuckles, another canteen and a loaf of bread that had been only slightly scorched by the fire. Then he was gone.
You made a big mistake, Mr. Black. You left me alive.
Denver eased his old bones into a more comfortable position in the rocks where he lay about a mile from the ambush site. He wasn't hurt bad, he was just bruised all to hell and gone. He managed to grab some gear just as that damn horse hit him and knocked the crap out of him. He had a canteen of water, some biscuits and a rifle, and he was alive. Harvey and Jeff, Smoke's regular hands, lay in a thicket and tried to blend in with the earth. Jeff had a bullet in his leg and Harvey's left arm was busted, but they were alive too. Tim was the only one of the new hands to make it out alive, but he was weaponless except for the sheath knife he carried in his boot. He'd seen those dirty bastards shoot down and ride down his friends with no mercy. One thing Tim knew for a dead bang fact was that he was going to find those responsible and make them pay a terrible price. He prayed to God to give him the wherewithal to do just that. Jean lay behind a log and listened to the men searching for her. She clutched a butcher knife in her right hand. Then she listened to him ride off, and the silence that followed was just about as terrifying. Jean didn't think she had ever been this frightened. She rose from her hiding place and had not walked 100 yards before discovering the body of one of Smoke's men. She knelt down beside the body and made up her mind to do what she felt she must. Jean tugged off his boots and forced herself to pull off his jeans and shirt, too. Always keeping a wary and watchful eye, Jean undressed and then dressed in jeans and men's shirt. The cowboy's holster was empty. She looked around frantically for the gun, but there was no gun. At least she couldn't find it. But at least now she felt she had a chance of staying alive, if she could just get her fear under control. Smoke picketed his horse near water and sat down to think matters through. Several times he'd come very close to being spotted on horseback, so he decided to stay on foot until he had scouted the valley through and arrived at a plan of action. Clint Black had no choice but to kill them all. He could not leave a one of them alive. Keeping that in mind, Smoke had ridden back to the bodies he'd found and pulled out the marking stake. That was a sign of a survivor that he just couldn't leave behind. Then, only a short time afterwards from where he sat on the ridges, he had watched Circle 45 riders return to the bodies and drag them off. There was to be a mass grave somewhere to the south of the ambush site. He and Nate had scouted out the long valley and found only a few passes. Clint had planned his ambush well. But how did he know a herd was coming? How could he have known? Tony and Gene's attorneys were Boston-based. twins had assured Smoke they had told no one local about the herd. It was a puzzle. Smoke quickly shifted locations when he heard the approaching horse, moving into the brush at the edge of the small clearing. His big hand closed around a rock about the size of an apple. Circle 45 rider, his dark duster tied behind the saddle, walked his horse slowly into the clearing. Smoke moved in from his hiding place and walked slowly so he wouldn't alarm the horse. He wanted that canteen, rifle, and rope. He might have a bait of food in the saddlebags. The rider's skull was busted wide open. Smoke took the man's gun belt and then dragged the raider into some bushes and dumped him. He pulled the saddle off the horse and picketed it with his own. Saddlebags contained a sack of cartridges, some dirty socks, and two biscuits and bacon wrapped in paper. Smoke ate those, drank some water, felt better. He then wrapped the dead man's weapons in a ground sheet and carefully hid them under a rotten log. If he found any of his own people alive, chances were they would need those weapons. Then, with a grim expression on his face, Smoke picked up his rifle and started walking. He was going hunting.